Welcome to the RC Roundtable Podcast, where we discuss the latest RC hobby news, events, model reviews, and a whole lot more. Well, hey, folks. Well, happy New Year. Well, technically, it's almost New Year here when we're recording this, but by the time you hear this, it'll be 2025. In fact, it's already 2025 in half the world as we record this, as a matter of fact. But anyways, happy New Year, everybody. How's it going?
Thank you. All good here. And I don't know what to believe because you keep winking at me. So are you...
You had to say something, yeah.
Of course he did. It's hard to miss it, Fitz.
Okay, for those of you who are not watching this and listening on the podcast, my pseudonym today is Popeye because I am my own worst enemy. So I had an incident where I fall down and hit a table with my eye, apparently. And so my right eye is semi-closed. I can open it up a little bit. So it sees just fine. There's no damage. The eye doctor said your eyeball is fine, but your eyelid has some issues that you may need to go see a specialist and see if you damaged a muscle or not. So my right eyelid is two-thirds closed, and so I'm constantly winking at. So Terry, no, I don't like you that much. It's just involuntary.
All right. Well, good luck getting that resolved. It must be annoying.
It is very annoying.
Yeah. Are you able to drive?
I can drive, but it's a pain. It's kind of, I can do it, but, you know, every once in a while I got to pop the eye lift just to double check my
people next to him, perception. He's doing this.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when I like to lane check, when I, you know, say take a right turn, I like to look to my right, but, you know, now it's mostly occluded, so it's kind of a pain. And I use the cruise control with fortunately my car has that, adaptive cruise control, which is real nice. So it takes a little bit of the strain off, but it's still a pain.
I actually don't like adaptive cruise control.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's my problem with it is, and not to get too far away from RC stuff.
Knuckle dragging behemoth.
My everyday car doesn't have it. It just has regular cruise control, but my wife's car has the adaptive. And what I find is it's so smooth shifting from the speed I set it to when it gets behind a slower car. I don't realize it's slowing down. And then I get a few miles on the road. I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I going so slow?
It took me forever to find this setting on my wife's car because the car ahead of us would be a mile away. And then her car would start slowing down. I was like, I'm pushing the accelerator and it won't let me go faster. So I couldn't find the setting to like reduce it or just bring it to zero.
Oh, yeah, there's a, what do you call it, distance setting, yeah. Mine's a little annoying. Yeah. You know, mine is a little bit annoying if I use it, especially like on a side street or a road, not a highway, when people will do turn-offs or turn off, and the car doesn't realize that they're turning, it thinks they're stopping. And so you're going, suddenly you're braking hard because a person is turning off into a driveway and people behind you are like, what the hell? Because obviously your car would be out of the way by the time they turn, but the car doesn't do a predictive calculation that the car in front of you was turning. It just thinks it's stopping. And so you end up, I sometimes had to hit the gas pedal while I'm in the cruise control so it doesn't start braking on me while a car is turning out of the way or exiting or something like that. So anyways. All right. Maybe one day I'll have Tesla-level cruise control or something.
Yeah, we can talk about that offline one day.
But anyways, yes. So, yeah, it sucks. So the flying activities were severely... we'll talk about it later where, you know, for the first time in my life, I had to have somebody else fly my airplane.
Oh, man.
And it wasn't me.
It wasn't you.
I know.
All right.
So, hopefully I can get this resolved quickly and back to normal.
Everything else aside, good luck getting all that squared away and hope you're back to your usual self here pretty soon.
We'll have to get him a fork with a cork on it like Steve Martin did in Dirty Rotten Scoundrel so he doesn't poke himself in the eye. Oh,
I have to go to the bathroom.
I have to go to the bathroom. Thank you.
I survived my childhood with both eyes and all my arms and legs.
Exactly. Right. 10.
Got my digits. Oh yeah, I still got metal in one of my fingers from when I broke my hand, and they had to. Yeah. But as a kid, I broke a tooth, and I got bit by a dog in my face. And,
Welcome to Old Men Troubles with RC Roundtable Podcast.
No, these were when I was a kid.
I know. It's just like we're ailing, talking about all our ailments. Oh, yeah. I still got shrapnel in that knee from that bicycle accident.
The time I got hit by a truck here by like stitches. It was a toy truck, but still I got hit by a truck.
Little Tonka truck, throw it into the air.
It was probably literally a Tonka truck, but I had needed stitches. It was enough to. Oh my gosh. Anyways,
and we haven't even started drinking yet, folks.
yeah, don't get me drunk. You hear all kinds of weird stories. All right, anyways, that said, thanks for joining us. We've got the hoarder Terry Dunn and Santa's elf Lee Ray joining us for the episode 210 of the RC Roundtable. So what's up? What are we talking about in this New Year special? What's the first up on the agenda?
I think we're skipping new products because we're not aware of anything hot and fresh.
I don't think anything came out. I think after Christmas.
Well, how about this? How about new products being anything you got RC related for Christmas?
Yeah, my family lived a long time ago.
So you have nothing. Okay, Terry got nothing. I bought myself an NX.
I bought myself an excuse for the lead to tell what he got for Christmas.
There you go. got me a new radio, so there you go. Now we can carry on.
A Spectrum NX10?
Plus.
Plus. Oh.
Not quite as special as Fitz's 10SE. Have you done the firmware upgrade yet, Fitz?
To get your 20 channels? Keep meaning to do it, but I haven't gotten around to it. Yeah. I keep procrastinating. What is yours?
Right. Well, I thought you were going to go in more detail about this radio.
Oh, it's nice. I do not like the gimbal sticks. They're very spiky, and being that I'm a thumb guy, it ain't working too well for me, so I will order replacements. Now, my DX9 has, I will say, thumb sticks, and they're very, very nice, and they came with the radio when I got it secondhand from a guy who hadn't had it very long, so I pretty much had it new. But it's been many years. You're a pincher, so it's probably okay.
Yeah, join the pinching club.
No, I'm a thumb guy, so they're just it's like a diabetic blood, glucose test every time you're using the thing. It's like the blood just streaming down the gimbal sticks.
It gives you your sugar level every time you touch it.
Yeah, exactly. Your heart level is good. I will replace those. I had some struggles, and I'd be curious. This will be the conversation piece for our listeners. If you've had a radio, if you're a Spectrum person first, and you say have moved from a DX series to an NX series, I had the worst problem taking the model memories out of my DX9 to send them over to the NX10. I only have about 80 model memories in the DX9, and when I transferred it over, it copied over 212 files. And so several were duplicates. And the names, I see someone raising their hand in the back, hold for Q&A. And so there were several duplicates, and it was at different times because I was looking at the models like, that's not one of my first models. So none of the first, say, year or two models had duplicates. And then there was a stint where there were tons of duplicates, and then the last section or the recent section didn't. Long story short, it just gave me an opportunity to sit down and go, all right, let me clean it up. It's like getting a new computer. You're going to reset, all your software, start from scratch. So I did. I went through and removed about three or four planes I don't have anymore, but I ended up back with around 82 models, all renamed. I had to edit every SPM file, but it's all working now. But it just was a hassle, but I'm done, so I can move on. Yes, sir, in the back. Mr. Hoarder, go ahead.
I was just commenting on your choice of words here. Only 80 files. Does that mean you have 80 active models ready to go right now?
I'm going to do what you did. And for our listeners, I'm using my active models. There are 80 models in there. So at least 80 plus that have receivers or I have programmed. And most of them, yes, are flying. However, there are some that need some work. So I'm not going to go and tell you what the percentage is. But I'd say of the 80, at least 75% of them are ready to fly.
Okay, that's good. I just... if I were to go through some of my radios, I'd probably find some that I crashed a few years ago or sold. I don't necessarily keep up with all the memory slots when I get rid of a plane or crash it, whatever.
So, I mean, think about this, though, for a second. I mean, how many UMX models do you have, Terry?
That many.
Okay, well, let's say it's five.
Times three, sure.
Okay, so right there, you're going to, I mean, you'll have 15 UMX models. They already got receivers in there. You're just, you know, buying and fly. So that takes up a huge stint. So add my UMX models, which is probably maybe eight, to my Thunder and Lightnings, which are all set and ready to go. So, again, there are some kits that I have that are, you know, fill up pretty quick.
Right, and to be clear, I did not mean it as an insult. You have my respect for having that many models ready to go. It's a lot of overhead to keep that many airworthy.
So, and where to store them.
And where to store them.
And then there were a couple of times like, oh, I need to give that plane some love. So I got to go back there and go take it out, dust it off, and put it in the air.
Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations on your new radio.
Yeah.
And have you flown with it yet?
I have, and that kind of goes into our segue of our next topic, I think.
Okay.
If that's our new topic.
Go right ahead.
It sounds like it should be.
Well, I think Fitz has to start because this is kind of a Fitz show that I just showed up with my camera and an airplane. Bummer.
Oh. It was kind of another show that we just showed up. I've been working on the Old Crow RV8 from Zego Models that Legend Hobby is offering, and I finally got it done. And they were also, I got the word that the Legend Hobby folks were going to go up to Bomber Field to also fly a pre-production model of their new 60cc size P-51. I said, oh, well, hey, if you can find a photo of that, it'd be cool.
Well, I have the video, but it's kind of long, so.
Oh, okay. I said, well, it'd be a great opportunity to go up there as well. It's a nice day to bring the RV-8, which is, it's got a nice military paint scheme on it, and do a little bit of photo shoot and maiden the plane. And this is where, Lee is showing a picture right now. There's me starting the plane out at Bomber Field, and, one of the Bomber Field club members holding the plaque. I forgot his name. Do you remember his name, Lee?
Oh, that's Matt. Matt Picardi. Matt.
Thank you. So Matt was generously holding the plane while I started it up. And also, Matt was able to take it off and maiden it for me because it's my stupid Popeye. I can't really see up very well. So I said, hey, Matt, would you mind taking it up just to make to get it trimmed out and take a few flights, get some photo shots, since Lee was gracious enough to come up with his camera gear. And so Matt took it up, got it trimmed out, and did some nice passes. It's got a smoke system in it, so we did a few smoke passes. The smoke system worked like a charm. Seemed like a nice flying plane. The engine wasn't quite tuned as well. It was running a little rich, so I need to go in. It was definitely running a bit rich on the high end. So I need to go in and retune it and that kind of stuff. But good thing is it doesn't need a whole lot of power to fly, so it flew just fine. Looked like it flew well and true. There's a nice shot. We landed in the grass, and apparently we hit a puddle. So this is a nice shot of the water splashing up as he landed it.
You need floats now.
Yeah.
It was amazing how much water came up. He held it so fine. Look how much up elevator he's got.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did a good job. Didn't hurt the prop or anything. So he's got a 40cc twin Stinger engine in it. This is actually the same engine that came out of my shock cub. But I hadn't floated in a while, so when I put it in here, it was running a little bulky, so I started tweaking with the settings, and I guess I overdid it on a mixture after I put the cowl in. So anyways, but it's a really nice plane. It's the RV8 Old Crow. You can go to Legend Hobby and take a look at it. Looks like it flies really nice. I've done some interesting things with it, too, so when my eye is healed up a bit more, I'm going to go out and fly it myself and play with some of the settings I did as well. For one thing, I actually mixed the flaps to act as flapperons as well as the ailerons to have super ailerons if I want. So it should be, I want to see how sprightly this thing is. And it's got flashing navigation lights in it and all kinds of stuff. So we'll be doing a review on it on my channel at some point. So look for it there.
What's the wingspan on it?
That's a good question. It's right here. Give me a second. I thought it's 71 inches. Yep.
All right. So not a tiny airplane.
No, pretty good size.
Yeah.
right. It looks like it's one of the ones I think I have a lot of fun with.
Right, cool. And if we're taking votes, I think that photo of it going through the puddle should be our next Facebook header image.
Sure.
Cool. All right. Yeah, so take nice out shot. The jet I just put up there?
No. Just the next one. I didn't say change today. Okay. No. When you're ready to change.
And here, for those watching on YouTube, Legend Hobby has a exclusive. It's a P-51B model. 50-60 cc size that he's getting ready to offer, and he brought out him and another local builder have the it was a pre-production Chris. Module. Chris, yeah. That's right, Chris. You can see it has the bubble. Is that Malcolm
hood? The Malcolm hood, yeah.
Yeah. So, which is nice. Apparently, he's going to plan on offering two types of canopies for it, so you can have the Malcolm bubble top or the more less bubble-ish regular top. It also, what's nice, it'll be without any paint scheme or anything, so you can do your own custom scheme on it. And when I saw the Malcolm top, I thought, wow, a British version would be really neat. The A36, I think they called them.
Yeah.
It'll have the right amount of machine guns on it, and it has a retractable tail wheel, and even a working radiator exhaust flap vent. What do you want to call it? Apparently, you can make it servo controlled.
Yeah.
So
that was nice to see that. I'd have to look and see. I don't know if the A36 was a B model. I thought it was an.
It might not be technically, but I think it's close enough. I think the nose might be slightly different. And as come to think of it, the cowl.
I think the A36 was the Allison powered one.
Yeah, it was Allison powered, and I think there might be some slight differences, but
yeah.
But
all you historians out there can yell at us, Adam Drain, if you're screaming at your radio right now.
I think if you're not entering Top Gun, you can have a reasonably looking A36 with it, you know, any one of the earlier model P-51s. At least you have some options, so it's really nice.
Yeah.
And I think it'll come in two color schemes, he told me, olive drab, and I think silver is another option. There's no decals or anything on it. But so it's nice to go, you see, we made in two different planes, plus being Bomber Field, other people showed up with some neat stuff. A bunch of jets showed up as well, flying around, turbines, and some EDFs, and that kind of stuff. So it was a really nice day.
All right, cool. Well, I'm glad you guys are getting good flying weather. Because, you know, it's pretty much not flying weather up here anymore. Although,
nice.
You know, we're recording this on the afternoon of New Year's Eve. A few of us in my club are planning to go out flying tomorrow, our Frozen Finger Fun Fly, which is kind of a tradition for a lot of clubs around here. And it's not going to be that cold. All the snow's melted because we've had 40-degree temperatures the last week. But
that's nice.
Yeah, yeah, but I think this is kind of prime. Yeah. Plenty of mud, but this should be prime flying weather for you guys. You're not going to sweat your faces off. And
yeah, it was actually really nice. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. It was like perfect weather.
It was perfect. It was the kind of weather you wish for the B-17 gathering.
Yeah. And here we see Lee flying. Is that the flight line P-38?
That's my flight line P-38 on my first flight with my NX radio.
Okay. Look at you go.
Yeah. So you've broken in the your NX-10 and zipping along quite nicely.
Had a really good range test too, so a lot further than I expected. So, and nice. This is our buddy Tomas with Legend Hobby, who thankfully recorded a flight video. I haven't had many of my P-38, so I really appreciate him coming up next to me and recording it, because it flies really well. Such a nice plane.
Yeah,
kind of one of those. Should I go ahead and buy another one? Put it on the shelf.
Just have a spare. In case. Yeah.
Hey, well, no kidding, man. It's kind of like the Twin Otter. You know, I got a second one because of how much I love it. So,
yeah. You never know when they might stop producing them.
I forgot. Did you upgrade the power system on that thing?
I did.
Okay.
On both of them, both my P-38 and my Tiger Cat.
All right. Cool.
All right.
So, did Tomas shoot that with your video camera or his own?
His own. I think it was like a Samsung phone or something like that.
Oh, really? I was going to comment. It looked like nice, steady footage. And you can't always just hand off your camera to somebody who's not used to it, because there's some skill and technique involved.
It was. I'm very, very grateful. I thanked him profusely.
Good job, Tomas. All right. Yeah. Was that everything for Bomber Field?
I think so. I don't think we have anything else.
Yeah, that was Bomber.
Yeah. Bomber was a thing.
Okay.
And then we had a flotilla.
Was that the day after, the day before? How did that all
That was the
out?
Day before. Wasn't that the day before, right?
Yeah, the day before. Yeah, it was Saturday.
Okay. So Fitz's Fantastic Flotilla of Fun, or Fabulous. Yes. What's our adjective there? Our F
Fantastic.
Adjective. Fantastic Flotilla
of Fun. F cubed, whatever. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I minimized that screen. I have some pictures too. Sorry for those that are listening.
Or the little caveat.
Silver Rodriguez Park in Clear Lake, Texas, the southeast corner of the city.
But first, I've got a slight diversion. I just remembered something. So let me start sharing here.
Where's the share button? I've got to change the batteries in my pacemaker. No, right now.
No. Well, while Fitz is looking that up, and speaking of photos, are we keeping track of who has the most cover photos? For a while, we were.
Oh, for Model Aviation?
Yeah, magazine cover photos.
Yeah, Terry's stepping up his game, man.
Add another notch for me.
I saw that.
But was the recent one yours?
Yeah, I didn't put it down here.
Yeah, that recent one's his. But I think I don't want to segue too far ahead, because when you mentioned that, I am reminded that we went to Simano's after the flotilla, and on the counter was a copy of the Model Aviation with Fitz holding his glider. I forget which one it is. And he autographed it. And I went to Mike Simano, who's working there. He sold the business, but he's working. He said, "Hey, can I sign it? Cause that's my photo."
So yeah, I guess it's the January issue, but it has my article about the Neat Fair, which we've talked about on here, but the cover photo is, one of the shots I took there of Lee Woodworth, who we've talked about, Adam Woodworth, numerous times, of one of our RC friends and also the CEO of Wing. That's his dad. He was one of the guys I hang out with at the Neat Fair. So
I just didn't realize his dad was into RC.
Oh, yeah, in a big way. And I think that's a big reason that Adam is as well.
Well, so, I mean, while we're here, it took me a second, but there's the cover photo on our screen right now. So. Good job, Terry. I guess maybe we should do a little, check. how many we've had? Just for fun. Who's keeping record exactly? And now
that's a Sig Demicel that he's had for a long time. I've seen several of those recently. They fly so well, and they're from the days of brush motors and NICADs. But man, I don't know where the CG is.
Find it.
Anyway, they fly real neat. And I guess the CG is way back, because they have no mass in front of the wing. So anyway.
Yeah, a lot of those planes back then were real tail heavy, or marginally. Probably the only way they flew.
Let's make it a twin.
The tail heavy.
And those are neat because they have articulating tail. It's like on a ball joint. And so
a gimbal. Rudder.
Yeah. So anyway.
All right. So Lee, I don't have the superpowers to.
You do. You just keep forgetting how to use it.
Yeah, I got to remember how to log in. All right. So I wanted to start. Actually, technically, this is not.
Oops. Yeah, I was going to say, Sylvan Rodriguez suddenly got a lot larger.
Yeah, this is not. This was actually a week before they had some sailboat races in my area that I just recently found out about. These guys are kind of semi-hidden, although they don't have a Facebook page. But I found out that they were having this literally like in my town or next town over. So I popped over and they had a pretty good crowd of Dragonflight 95 that they sail around, and there's another scene of them getting ready to put in the water. And it's a good group of guys. They have announcements and they have a bunch of buoys, and they'll run for quite a while, for several hours. They're pretty consistent too. They'll run a couple laps and immediately collect up and get back into position and run a couple more laps and repeat over and over and over again. Only stopping after maybe half a dozen or so runs to make sure they're not leaking. So it was neat to have that in the area, because I now have my own DF-95, and so I can actually join them. And there it is on the water. This is my own regatta event this past weekend.
Can you zoom in a little bit?
So this is the maiden's voyage or reed maiden of my Dragonflight 95 out in the water. It ran great, absolutely no leaks. It's really, this is a fun symbol to sail. I didn't buy it to race. I just bought it because I had driven somebody else's and I thought, wow, this is really nice. It's very maneuverable. It's really fast. And it's a cool looking boat. But now I have another excuse to have it because they actually do some low key races, not a huge thing, but they just fun races locally. And so that was really neat to get it out there in the water finally after. It's funny, it didn't come with a hatch. You can barely see it. So I was able to find somebody had the files to 3D print a hatch up on Thingiverse. Found it and 3D printed a hatch for it. And so I had my flotilla, last one of the year, kind of a last minute thing. Thanks, Lee, for coming down also and participating in it. Got a few guys.
That's my boys.
Our buddy Nathan and Phil also came down, and some of the local guys. And here is Nathan.
Combat.
Nathan and Phil. Yeah, I think the boat on the left is pushing the boat on the right. The boat on the left is Nathan's. And the one on the right is Phil's. Phil's put his in the water, and like 2 minutes later, it was dead in the water. So I guess he didn't charge the batteries or something. So they pushed it back just before you got there, Lee. So this is just a scene of them pushing the boat back. You can imagine one, the tugboat died, and the sort of a fishing trawler is pushing it on the side. And his local club member, Mark, had this kind of neat, kind of a patrol boat. It's a military boat, but it doesn't look that military-ish, but it... I think it's one of the pro boats from Horizon. I can't remember the name of it.
Is that the Swift boat?
I think it is a Swift boat. You can see the guns on the top and the gun in the back. But it's not a jet boat. It's got a regular propellers.
Right.
I brought up my little teeny tiny submarine I picked up at Jonal a couple years ago. That's a neat little sub. I found out something new about this little sub. Because I was playing with, because it has...
It's got torpedoes.
I wish. It's a little tiny thing. It's only about, 3 inches long, maybe? 3 or 4 inches
long? Oh,
yeah,
it's tiny. Yeah.
And it has a ballast pump, so you can kind of press the button and it'll dive without having to move forward. And I would get it to where it's kind of neutrally buoyant. And I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. And I'd look away, I'd do something, I'd come back, and it's on the surface. I was like, wait a minute. What's going on? And so I hit the pump again. Bottomed it out on the bottom of the pond. It's only about 9 inches deep where I was, and let it sit there. And I counted, and after about 10 seconds, if you don't press any buttons, it pops back up by itself.
Ah, I see.
So it's got an auto surface timer in it. That way, it doesn't sit on the bottom forever. I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
But anyways, there's a couple more pictures. So here is Lee earning his keep by. Pushing in a shovel head speedboat. This is another guy, Tim. This is this really.
I just showed up and they said, Lee, do you have your tugboat? I said, yeah. And so I set it up and brought it in.
Yeah.
Is he snared in that rope there?
Kind of, sort of. He hit the rope and apparently knocked his drive loose. And so he was stuck. And so Lee had to push him back, kind of following the line. What happened is we fly out the local pond, they started putting these mooring lines for our fountain in the middle. Mm-hmm. I think this is the first time we saw them surface like that. Plus the water's really low, so I think normally the water may be a little lower, higher enough that this is not a problem, but since the water was so low, it was just basically on the surface.
Gotcha. So the question I have is, Lee, did you use FPV for this rescue?
Nope.
It's all set up, right?
It is. It's a separate canopy. Thought I didn't bring it. I just wanted to piddle around because we brought other boats.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Austin brought his sailboat, which is a cheap, Thunder Tiger. Oh, was it an Olympic? Something like that. Anyway, he brought his. We were charging the speedboat battery, the pro boat that you gave me. But then the storms came.
Ooh.
Yeah. And the winds kicked up and. Oh, that's hilarious.
It's a picture of Lee flanked by his two sons, also driving some sort of boats, and their buddy Nathan on the side there looking over. Lee was given some sort of, I don't know what you were doing. I don't know either.
But
you were animated. No, you were animated. You were patting your son on the back, and you were kind of giving him directions and being... emotional
obnoxious?
Support or something. I just thought it was funny because this picture, I was actually standing in the water. I had high-heeled galoshes, water boots, yeah. waiters.
Yeah.
And so I said, that's a neat picture of.
I like it though. I like the smiles on my boys' faces. Me looking like I know it all, and the fact that we're wearing our shirts that my wife got. Awesome. Actually, yeah. She got all three of us the same shirt, but Ryan refused to participate. But for those Ryan. Listening, we're wearing shirts that say "Easily distracted by airplanes
while driving boats."
Well, yeah. Exactly.
So I realize there's some forced perspective here, but is Ryan really that much taller than you now?
He is that much taller than me.
Yeah, he's grown up.
Huh. All right.
I think he's like 5'9".
Austin's going to get his retribution soon.
Never.
There's years of older brother abuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I think that's it.
They're more roommates than brothers.
Yeah.
So I was doing something, and I remember a little sub I talked about. I pulled it out of the water and stuck it on the just on the edge of the launch area. And I was doing something. Then Nathan walks up to me and says, he said something like, "Here, hold this. Drive your boat around, your submarine around." Like, wait, what? What are you talking about? And then I looked down and I didn't see my sub. I was like, "Where the hell's my sub?" I thought maybe he took it and was going to drive it around or something. And as I'm driving around his boat, I suddenly realize, "Oh, there's where my sub is."
He put it on the deck.
So, yeah, taking it, put it on the deck of his boat.
Yeah, that's funny.
But it looked really good. It looked like it met like a Jacques Cousteau kind of thing or something, a little bath escape or something. And so I was driving my boat around on his boat. That was kind of neat. I think that's the last picture. Yeah. So we had a good time. It was a little bit like turnout because the weather was starting to be a little wonky and it ended up being rainy eventually. But we had enough time to do what we need to do, and it didn't rain until after we broke for lunch anyway. So, so it was a good day. Thanks everybody for coming out.
I didn't know about this one until after the fact, or maybe right before, but if I live in the Houston area and I want to go play with Fitz's boats, how do I find out about these things?
Send me a message and I add you to the mailing list. I have an email mailing list that I occasionally will send out the event notices.
Okay.
So you don't know about it unless, there's two ways. Either I send out, you're on a mailing list, I send it out, or if I happen to post a flyer at the local hobby shops that you might see.
Or you post on our Facebook page. So please join our Facebook, RC Roundtable, right. Or maybe even Hobby View, because occasionally you will post it there, and you should post it there every time.
I do. I just forget. I keep forgetting.
Well, don't forget.
Yeah. Remind me next time I do that.
As your producer, you need to post that event.
If I had a producer. All right.
You still getting pretty good turnout?
It was low this time around, but it's been big before.
Yeah, well, two things. It's holidays. The holidays. Several people said, "Hey, I would have come, but family is interrupting, right. is interrupting our game." And two, the weather was really threatening
for
the day. So, it was a double indemnity.
Last time you were talking about the bathroom debate. Did that ever get resolved?
Bathroom debate?
Where you had to pay for the bathrooms or something?
Oh yeah, the last couple of times the bathrooms have been open, so I haven't had to pay for them.
Okay.
In fact, this time they would have been open, but something happened. They said the bathrooms are temporarily closed.
Oh.
But they were open like 2 days before the event. I went the day or two before the event. I went out to take measurements of the lake and they were open. But the day of, they had a sign on the door saying they're temporarily closed. I don't know. Maybe somebody exploded inside or something. I don't know.
So this is there 2 days before and they're fine. And then somebody
exploded.
I know nothing about these things.
All right, well, I'm going to take over and say what we did after the flotilla. First off, we went to have lunch together as a group, which we normally do after a flotilla.
Did you go to PT's?
Was it Jay Henry's? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Jay Henry's. Yeah,
Jay Henry's. Really good. What do you call it? It's a pub type environment.
It's a pubberant.
And I'm going to publicly thank Fitz again. The boys wanted the mac and cheese and what?
Buffalo chicken mac and cheese.
Yeah, buffalo chicken. And so Ryan asked for the sauce on the side. Austin said, "Oh, it's probably no big deal." He puts it on there. But it's a spicy sauce. It's a spicy sauce. And Austin was like, oh, that's tangy. And Fitz kindly said, "Hey, I'll trade with you." And he did. He traded fish and chips for Austin. So thanks for saving my son's palate. from and then Jeff Dunn, he was there, and he was like just pouring that stuff all over his pretzel.
Yeah. So, yeah.
In his eye. He was like, this is nothing.
Yeah, speaking of destroying bathrooms.
Yes.
Because it was funny, because I normally order the buffalo chicken mac and cheese. And this, for some reason, they said, oh, I'll try the fish and chips. And that's when he didn't realize that it was buffalo, spicy buffalo sauce on the chicken.
Spicy, yeah. Sometimes it's not that bad. So thanks for doing that. That's a great place, by the way, for those of you in the Houston area. J. Henry's down there by, right next to the pond, Sylvan River.
Yeah, it's a really nice restaurant. And of course, they got 100 types of beer or something like that. But
oh yeah, you know. Yeah, tons. So if you're a beer drinker, then definitely go hang out there. So after that, the two things for us is that we of course wanted to go to the Flotilla, but Austin had heard about an indoor crawling place for his car. Austin has gotten into rock crawling big time. I don't know anything about the car, Terry. Don't ask me questions. I know nothing. But
if it's
this little car.
Years old, I don't know anything about it either.
It's a little car, brushless, high torque, super. It's been highly modified. He and his roommate at Embry-Riddle, they do this all the time. It's like second to eating and breathing. They're rock crawling. So Austin had said, "Hey, I heard about this place. I'd like to go." So it was next to Simonos. So we first took a trip to Simonos. Survive the horrific rains and winds, which insert weather report. We had tornado warnings both at my house and where we were. There was a tornado that touched down about 8 miles south of us going towards our house. So my wife was at home. She had gotten the alert, so she was ready. And then while we were at Simonos, we had gotten a tornado warning that was one right off of 45, Terry.
Wow. That's
close. Forget the name of the town. Yeah. So it was kind of nasty weather, but we went behind, a street behind Simonos. There's an indoor place called Ultimate Indoor RC. They have a drifting area and a crawling area. Now, it's a neat place. It's indoors. It's air conditioning. You know, you're going to pay a fee. I thought $20 was kind of high. That's just what I'm saying. And Austin said the place in, place in Florida. Gosh darn it. There's another rock crawling place in Florida. I think it's like $5 all day there. It was a pretty steep price, I thought, for the size of the crawling. However, that being said, I'm going to show the video now. Fitz and I were highly, interested in the drifting, which was pretty darn cool.
Same place.
So it's on. Go ahead, Fitz.
Yeah. There's two sections. There's one room for the rock crawling and a second larger room for the drifting. And by chance, we happen to be there where they're having a drifting competition. So there's a bunch of people there from all around parts of Texas and whatnot there driving around and doing stuff. As you can see now, we're showing a picture. Ali took a picture of them. And it was just really neat. It's sort of mesmerizing watching these guys go around the track. And
slow.
Slow, yes.
This is not slowed down video, folks. That's the actual speed. I'm sure it takes a lot of skill and some technique and, finessing with the electronics and the wheels and so forth. And now this is slow-mo. And for those of you listening, you can go to our Facebook page and catch this video. I think I may have put it up on our Instagram page. Not sure. But this is his car. This is Austin's rock crawling vehicle. I don't know what size that is, but it's kind of tiny.
1/14 scale, I believe.
It's pretty small. I think it might be smaller than that.
1/16, 1/14, something like that.
He was impressed. He goes, what he liked about this place is that the rocks were like real rocks. Like, I guess the other place had foam cutouts and stuff like that. It looked really cool, but it was in a small room, right? You saw it.
Yeah.
The crawling.
Yeah. Let me try it a little bit.
Yeah, so that car was like perfect size for that little room. If you had a bigger rock crawler, you'd be around in, a minute, and then you'd have to start all over again. Right. So,
yeah, it was neat. We had a nice conversation with one of the racers there doing
we pulled those photos.
So it's a competition, what criteria are they competing on?
This is cool. Terry, Fitzmite will tell you.
A good question because we asked him the same question. And so there were several different criteria that he had mentioned. Let's see if I can remember them all. One was how well they could maintain a constant speed and angle around the turns. And also how close you can get to the line without crossing it. You can get extra points if you just straddle the line. How well you either, if there's a lead car and a following car, and how well you can, if you're the following one, how well you can sort of align yourself and follow the lead car. How well you can, he had a name for it, how well you can switch. See, like at the very beginning of that video, he's facing one direction and sort of flips or snaps to a different, the opposite direction, almost like a 180. Yeah. And how well he can do that. Yeah, see how he's always skirting the line there? Apparently, how well you can do that, you can get extra points for style.
So well. There's judges.
So there's judges, there's, yes.
Okay.
It's a little bit and subjective.
Now, yeah. And then this is the second part where the, because it's just two cars that are racing. Yeah. It's not everybody at the same time. It's just two cars back to back. So the first car gets like the style points because they have to maintain the, like those red and yellow lines there. There's tape work all over the road. The other car gets points for how close he stays to the quarter panel. And in parallel with the other vehicles. So you'll see here in a second when they have three cars after the slow-mo pass. Like this guy's showing if there's, as long as the wheels stay all the way there, you get more points. Uh-huh. Unlike that blue car. Like right there. See how they're staying down low?
Yeah.
And this guy just came in. But I'm hoping to catch up here.
So yes, he's all sliding sideways. So as you're sliding sideways, how well you can maintain a constant angle both in and out of the turn, and how well you can follow the other car at the same angle. How close you can get to the lines without crossing them.
Yeah, that red car, we watched him racing, and he was very, steady the entire time. So
yeah, they get they get a lot of turn out of those front wheels.
Those crazy things will go practically 180 degrees.
I'll show you the picture. Yeah, it's right here. So look at the look at the turn on that.
Yes, and they have gyros on them. They have basically the equivalent of what is of a heading hole gyro on these things as they run around a turn, so they can try to help maintain the angle. And the wheels are basically plastic.
Yeah.
They're just
spinning. You don't want a lot of traction.
You don't want a lot of traction. They have almost no traction to them.
I assume they're four-wheel drive, so
they're not.
That's gonna be, oh, really?
They're two-wheel drive. They're all two-wheel drive. I asked him that, and he said some of the early ones were four-wheel drive. But it was, what did he tell me? I forgot why. I think the two-wheel drives were easier to drive or something like that.
Well, it's got to be really hard to get a U-joint if you're turning your front wheels that sharply.
Right. Awesome. Yeah, that may be the other thing, too. Yeah, you couldn't just get as much steering out of them.
Yeah.
So, the other thing was...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Another feature of his car, this is the one that had the bicycle on top. He was kind enough to get and open it up and show it to us, but this had a removable differential. So you could change the gear ratio on the fly.
Oh, I just assumed they had locked differentials.
No, we asked them that. They have real actual differentials on them.
So he says this part right here just snaps out and you just plug in a new one.
Ah, all right. And this is like all fancy carbon fiber. And
yes. Yeah. Did you hear what he said, Lee, when we asked him about buying them or the cost?
Did you catch that? No, what did he say?
He says, because I asked him about getting into it. He goes, oh, yeah, one of the best ways to do is go to like marketplace or on a used market, and you can find them, people unloading them for really good, really cheap prices. You only pay $1,000 for one. Like, wait, what? So apparently they throw a lot of money at these cars.
Right. Well, I'm sure you could do it for less. Like we had talked before loosely about you maybe putting some plastic wheels. You okay there?
I'm good. Gravity jack, you're still there. Yeah.
But you have the RS4, which is a four-wheel drive road car kind of thing.
Yeah.
I thought we had talked a little bit about you trying to make that into a drift car. But
yeah, I bet I could. It'd probably be a fun project just to see what kind of drift car it would make. Since there's a track right here, I could just go out there and play around with it.
Yeah. So I guess like any kind of racing, if you're going to compete at top levels, you're going to spend a lot on a car. But maybe just to dip your toe in the water, you could get it at a much lower price.
Yeah, I'm sure. As long as I don't do competition, the track is open a lot just for practicing and whatever. So, I'm not going to spend nowhere near that much money for a drift car, but each to his own. And it was a lot of fun watching them, and kudos to the guys for being open and talking to us about it. They weren't snobbish or anything like that.
All right, cool. Yeah. So how big of a crowd does that draw in terms of racers or spectators?
It wasn't huge, maybe about a dozen, did you say, Lee? Roughly. Yeah, it was neat. The place also had a computer simulator for, I guess it was a drifting or just racing. Maybe they can do different things, but you could sit down on it. It had a chair and a steering wheel and stuff. It was kind of a nice little setup in the corner.
Okay. Maybe I've told you guys about this, but one of my friends up here in his basement, he has a racing setup with the articulating chair and the wheel and the screens that wrap around.
Oh, yeah? Oh,
it's nice. Yeah, maybe when you guys are up here, we can go by and see it. But it's a big deal. And he let me drive it one day. It's crazy. It's not like subtle pressure on the pedal. It's like full, you got to push down on the clutch and all that. They're trying to make it accurate. And I don't mind telling you, I got a little bit nauseous driving that thing around. It's
really, yeah.
Does it pump in, you know, gas fumes while you're racing?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Is there a fan blowing dirt in your face as you're racing?
Exactly.
The first track I was on was short course truck racing, which has a lot of jumps and stuff. And it's bouncing my head around.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
And then after I got a little woozy, he put me on a road course. And anyway, it's incredibly fun, but also very hard. There's a lot of skill involved. And yeah, so you guys, I think, would appreciate it.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Even for airplanes, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think with this topic now, Terry, it's a good segue for you.
Is it?
Yeah, it's cars.
Okay. So, well, let's recap here. We've talked about airplanes at Bomber Field, boats at the park, cars at the little drift track, and what do you call it?
Rock climber?
Rock crawler. Rock
crawler,
yeah.
Rock crawler, yeah.
And now I guess we'll be talking about old cars. And I want to preface this by saying Lee
is the best friend you ever had.
That's far. You're always in the top five of my list of favorite people. But with
sometimes
this,
I count down. Is
you're always in the top five. But you are scratching the very, very tippy top with the nice thing you did for me a few weeks ago. And so this is not
uncommon. Does Fitz know? Did we mention this to Fitz?
I don't think Fitz knows yet. So this will be a surprise.
You're out of the loop, huh?
All right. Well, I'm going to switch screens here because I'm going to give myself liver? Some.
Yeah. But you quite often send me links to auctions. That's your thing. I check Facebook
Marketplace. Today.
Right.
You're auction whisperer.
You're checking auctions. And not only did you send me this link, you said, if there's anything here you want, I'll go get it for you. Because without that, none of this would have been possible because it would have been prohibitively expensive to ship. So how do we want to go about this? Because I've not seen this stuff yet. I saw the photos that were in the auction and you were there with me.
Let's start with the OS engine. I'm just kidding.
No, I want to do that.
We'll do that last.
Okay.
It does. No, I'll start with this. I figured this was the one you wanted to talk about.
Oh, so. That's one of them. So it was an estate sale, and the guy had some vintage RC cars, some of it quite, desirable. Not the greatest photos, so I wasn't sure about everything. The one that Lee is holding now is a Kyosho Javelin, which is basically a Kyosho Optima, but with a roll cage instead of a body.
Oh, neat.
And so it's got the gold shocks on it, which is a plus. Does it have a speed control in it?
My best Vanna White.
Is there a speed control in there
that you can see? I'm checking. I don't see. There's no motor either.
Oh, okay. So it's got a receiver and a servo, it looks like, and some flat spots on the tires. But
it's a Kyosho receiver, too.
And it looks like some of those aluminum parts are gold anodized, so those are upgrades. The shocks are upgrades. So, yeah, that'll be a neat piece. So thanks, Lee.
That's one of many. We may or may not. Can y'all hear me okay? I'm having to move the mic.
Yeah. So I think it ended up being 9 cars total. Not all of them. Yeah. Well, they were in groups of like 2 or 3 each. Right. Right. So this is another interesting one that they never showed it without the body. This is another Kyosho Optima. This one appears to have
no motor.
Kyosho Platinum shocks on the back and associated shocks on the front. But the neat thing about it is notice the red chassis. That appears to be a custom chassis made by Hot Trick, which they made several for different cars.
Yeah, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, never really that great. You didn't see many at the track, but in these modern era things, those custom pieces like this, custom chassis and all that, those are really desirable. So it's really rare to see an Optima with a hot trick chassis. So I am excited about this. Those are they red anodized? They're probably part of the hot trick. Yeah, those would be hot trick parts too. So yeah, the tires are all garbaged up, but the wheels look good and the chassis is there. So yeah, that's a nice item. So awesome.
My office is about to be a plethora, a gaggle of cars. So here's the cover.
So speaking of a plethora, I watched that movie, The Three Amigos, with my kids a couple weeks ago. And I think they appreciated it. That's one of the other ones I wanted to see. So what you're holding now is a Team Losi JRX2, the original version with the short chassis and the five-link suspension. And this one, again, I didn't see it under the body because all the photos showed it with the body.
There is nothing. It is also emptied out.
That's okay. Let's look at it. What does the bottom look like? Is it scratched up or is it okay? Oh, yeah, it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, pull that wing off and see if the body comes off easily enough.
Does it just snap?
The wing should pull straight up. It's just a friction fit with the wires. Yeah. Okay. And then the body should come off with those three points, two on the side and one in the front. There it goes. Okay. So it's got the battery box, although that appears to be an RC10 battery box.
Is that a diff cover or something?
Yeah, that's the gear cover that they put inside there. So, and then what's unique about these is notice the five-link rear suspension, the rear suspension.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was unique to this car. So anyway, so that's a neat piece. And we don't have to bore everybody by going through all of these, but you just happened to pick the three that I most wanted to see. So good job, Lee. Yeah.
There's hold on, I'll...
Are there other Kyosho cars or something in there?
I can't even remember anymore. There might have been. That's a Tamiya car, I believe.
It's nice. It looks good.
That's one of the more modern ones.
So maybe that'll be a drift car for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's is it the TTO2 chassis? No.
It's two-wheel drive. I looked it up. I can't remember what it is. But, hard to say.
But I think it's a more modern one, though.
Yeah.
It's got... put a Anderson power poles on it.
Oh, yeah, nice. I noticed some of the cars had speed controls and radio gear, some didn't. None of them looked like they were turnkey ready to drive. But yeah, there's some neat stuff in there. I guess that's a 12th scale road car body. So, yeah. So, Lee, thank you so much for going and picking this stuff up.
But wait, there's more. Oh, yeah, this is cheesy.
A Barbie Dream Corvette or something.
Does that have an RC?
You mean to hold on to this for you? That's questionable.
That's your gratuity for going to pick them up.
All right, we've got another nice car here.
We can do it quickly. But
this has got an AM receiver in it.
Nice. All right, so what is this? That, I think, is another RS4, an HPI RS4, four-wheel drive on-road car, I believe.
Hmm. I have a chassis of one of those, very similar. I use it as a camera dolly.
Well, I gave you one when you picked up some stuff for me a couple of years ago.
That's probably the one, yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. It made a really nice camera dolly.
So that has an upgrade motor and a nice Novak speed control on it and Anderson power poles. So, yeah. And you can tell by the radio equipment that it's 27 or 75 megahertz. So it's got some age to it. I would put these all in the mid-90s to late 90s, vintage-wise. Right. So I did want you to look in here. Oh, a front and rear wheel. Yeah. One of the other lots had a Kyosho motorcycle, and it says, not sure if all the parts are there. And then in this lot, you could clearly see that it has front and rear wheels from a Kyosho motorcycle. So whoever won that other lot is desperately looking for those pieces. Yeah, nice MRP motor. All right, so Lee, I want you to paw through this a little bit. In the photo, it looked like there was one aluminum wheel. Is there more than one?
It's aluminum.
No, that's just chrome-plated plastic. I think it was right in the middle.
This is plastic?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, hopefully there's a matching pair in there. But if it's only one, that's
still here we go, this one?
Yeah, yeah. Is there another one of those? Can you turn it sideways? That looks like an RC10 front wheel with an aluminum. They call them jelly bean wheels because the cutouts in them look like jelly beans.
Oh,
is that actual aluminum on the outside, Lee?
Yes.
Okay, so hopefully there's a matching buddy in there for that, but we'll see. But yes.
Yeah, of course.
If there's rear ones as well, I'll really go nuts. But that's cool. But anyway, this is a really nice stash of stuff. I assume I'll get it from Lee when you guys come up for AirVenture in the middle of summer. Until then, I'll just have to
dream about putting this on in a freight box and shipping it to you, man.
Oh, gosh, that would be hundreds of dollars.
Don't worry, y'all. Return to sender.
So, yes. Well, once again, thank you, Lee, for pointing me to that auction and then graciously going to pick it up. So
that was local here in Houston?
I think it was in College Station. And so one of the lots out of place had an OS Surpass. That's a 70, right? Or 72. Yep. Or, yeah. Does it turn over?
Yep. With compression.
Nice.
All right. So
is it for you, Terry, or is that for Lee?
Well, I offered it to Lee, but he denied it.
Wow.
So don't be surprised if that's up for sale pretty soon. Well, it's after the summer.
I was going to say to help pay for your shipping.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'm so happy about my questionable car here.
Yeah. What is that sticking out of it? Oh.
It's got a chopper.
What the heck?
It's like He-Man's car.
Yeah, Corvette. It's just like knives and things sticking out of the sides.
Got me.
All right. Well, there was one more thing. Oh, I posted a thing on our Facebook page yesterday. I picked up another car up here the other day. And sometimes I think I have a problem, but this was a really good deal. So, and the stuff that I got through your auction link was also a really good deal. So it's not a problem then. But I got an old RC12E, which is a 1978 vintage 12th scale road car. Yeah. There's a guy up here that had one for sale, and the body on it's not in very good shape, but the car itself looks like it's straight from 1978. Not even dirty. So there it is. Thank you, Lee. So is that a Ferrari body? I'm not sure, but it was stock to the kit. Go to the next image, please. Yeah, you can see it's got these giant Futaba servos with the square outputs.
Oh,
giant. Yeah, I didn't even think about it, but George Wilson asked a question in the post if it was splined or had the square outputs. So I went this morning and looked, and those are square output servos.
Did they use a split battery pack?
Nope. The battery is a 6-cell pack that goes, or maybe 4-cell sometimes.
4-cell for 12-cell,
goes under the receiver. Well,
yeah.
I think some 12th scale classes used 6-cell as well. But anyway, mechanical speed control, you can see.
Now I see it. Okay. It's got a double stack frame.
Okay.
Look at
that groove.
What are we looking at? Oh, the groove from the wiper on the speed control.
Mechanical speed control.
Yeah.
And it's got a
resistance.
The 05 size can motor. Doesn't have replaceable brushes, but it's all right.
I remember those cars being fairly quick.
Not always easy to drive.
Yeah.
Traction was elusive.
So when I was a kid,
go ahead.
I used to ride my bike. There was a local hobby shop that would race these in the parking lot on Sundays.
Yeah.
And so I'd ride up, and I didn't have a car or anything. I just liked to watch. And what I would do is I would, after a while, I would station myself near a turn or something. That way, when a car hit something and turned over, I could run out and flip it back over for them. Yeah. Just to be able to touch the car and flip it over was the highlight of my day.
Yeah, I'm helping.
I'm helping. I'm a helper.
Parking lot racing, I think, is particularly tough with 12th scale cars because there's always silt and oil and other stuff in there. One of the places I raced, they would prep the area, they would sweep it and stuff, and then they'd pour grape soda on the
parking lot. Grape soda? Oh, the sugar?
Yeah, so it would dry out and get sticky. I assume that
helped. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. So Anyway, that's all a bunch of car stuff. So sorry for you people that don't care about cars that are watching or listening. We were car and boat heavy this time. But I have another flying thing to show you, specifically you, Lee, because I think you inspired this.
Okay.
We had talked in the past about my Electric Flight Hawkeye, the thing that's like a kite, a 96-inch span kite with a little gondola underneath. Two channels.
Shared a video.
It's just rudder and throttle. I had a couple flights that I wouldn't necessarily call successful, but I was able to get it up and back down. More recently, I had what I would call a very successful flight. I had moved the CG forward, so it wasn't nearly as pitch sensitive with the throttle. And more importantly, I rearranged the landing gear so that it's actually sitting at a positive angle attack on the ground. Whereas before it was neutral or maybe a little negative. So it was tough to get it going. But even so, that front wheel, it's tricycle gear with a single front wheel. It just wasn't very long. And so in this most recent event, my first takeoff attempt, it kind of noses over and to the side, and the prop cut through the ripstop nylon that makes up the kite part of the wing. But it's ripstop. I'm like, it's not going to get worse in the air, right? So I just tried to take off again, and it worked great. So you have to point it directly into the wind. There's no steering on the ground. But once that kite fills with air and starts working, boom, the thing's gone. And it flies super slow. It's easy to control. As long as there's no wind, I assume it'll fly in a little bit of wind. But on this day, I tried it because it was windless and it worked great. There's video on our Facebook page, so you can go and watch that. But that was probably one of the last days we had around here before it started snowing. So subsequently, I had an idea because Lee put this little thought in my head. Let me grab it here.
Am I right? I'm hoping I'm right.
I don't know. Let's see. So here's the Hawkeye.
That floats on it.
So our buddy, all you need.
Yeah. Our buddy Sparky gave me these floats. I think they're from maybe the Fly Zone Beaver, like a 50-inch wingspan plane. And so I just modified. I cut a few plywood pieces on here, tried to give it also a positive angle of attack. And it just has these aluminum crossbars, which normally they wouldn't support any weight because all the weight from the airplane goes to struts that come to the floats themselves. So I put some carbon tube inside these struts to strengthen them. But I think it's ready to try. There's still no steering. The idea is to try it off of snow first, not the water, maybe eventually the water. But originally, you know, the nose wheel would have been right here. So I've got this much more area ahead. So maybe it won't tip over as easily now. I don't know. We'll see. But
well, you got it's like channels. I mean, you've got such a long, you know, surface area there. It may not pivot as much left and right.
Yeah. So I'm hoping it's a little more stable on the ground. My true hope is that it goes off snow easily, but also it has enough power to slide on grass in the summer, and I won't have to switch back and forth.
You know what else you can do? You can put a whole bunch of little LED lights on top of the floats and point them straight up to the canopy.
Oh, yeah.
And fly that sucker at night.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So I've already mentioned the lake out back is frozen over. So there's no reason I couldn't try it. But anyway, that's one of the things I've been working on. So I'm anxious to try it out maybe tomorrow, but I think there's going to be a little bit of wind tomorrow. So we'll see. But yeah.
And that's another estate sale purchase.
It is, yeah.
Accidentally forced Terry to buy because I was like, get that. You need that.
Yeah, interestingly, two flights ago or two flight attempts ago, things did not go well. I took off and went straight up and then boom, straight down. And I couldn't see any damage at the time. So I'm like, all right, I guess it's pretty tough. This is my most recent one, Lee showing a video. That's me nosing over. And you see where the prop cut into the ripstop there. But what I didn't know is from my previous outing, there's two spars that go from the middle out to about the mid-span, and they help hold the dihedral angle too. One of them had a radial split in it, like that I didn't see. And it was strong enough to hold here, but with a little bit of the twisting, it would bend. And I think that's how the prop was able to get into the ripstop on that nose over. So I have since replaced that with a new section of carbon fiber rod, and it should be good now. But you can see once it got in the air, it flew very nicely, very calm, easy to control.
Can you patch the hole, the ripstop?
Yep. I bought some tape. You might be able to see this here if you can bring it back to me for a second, Lee. So it wasn't just ripped. It actually cut a chunk out of it, so there was bare space there. But I got on Amazon, and they make tape that's made for patching, like ripstop nylon tents and things like that. It's not terribly cheap. So I think it was like $10 for a roll of this stuff that's only 20-something inches long. But I put a piece of that on each side, and it seems it's still reasonably pliable, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. So, yes, I patched up the ripstop. And here, does ripstop dry rot or degrade over time? I don't know.
No idea.
This thing's probably 15 years old or more. But anyway.
We'll find out.
Right. It's interesting to fly. Like I said, it's two channels, so you maintain pitch with the throttle. More throttle, it's going to pitch up more. And then you just steer it with the rudder. But it's not difficult. Everything happens so slowly that you kind of have time to think about it before it happens. And the landings weren't really much of an issue other than trying to keep it on the wheels. So anyway, it's been a fun little project to tinker with. And I want to try out these floats and see if they're an improvement or a degradation. We'll find out.
How much weight do you think you added with the floats versus the gear?
I don't know. I need to measure it and see. With the landing gear, it's only 2 pounds, and it's got acres of wing area. So I calculated what the wing loading was before, and it was ridiculous. Something like 3 ounces per square foot, or just way where it doesn't even make sense. So unless I took on a bunch of weight with these floats, I don't see it being an issue.
Is there any chance you could hand launch it and just land on the skids?
Probably.
Floats, excuse me.
Yeah, maybe. But of course, I'm going to try ROG first.
I know you will. But you know, if you have issues, I think if you just hand launch it and just kind of come to a stop and.
Yeah. Or ROS, rise off snow. And then ROW, rise off water. Maybe if it works well off snow and grass, I may try it off the water. It just seems so, I don't know, there's so much wing area out here to tip it over. I don't know. We'll see. I would have to build up a lot of confidence before I'm ready to do that. So that's what I've been working on. Other than, you guys will be happy to know, although you probably wouldn't know by looking, I've been cleaning my workbench here slowly. There used to be a whole pile of scrap balsa and other odds and ends that dates back more than a year. I finally went through that the other day and got it sorted away. I'm working my way in this direction, and eventually I'll get it all done.
So that's probably why my workshop is really messy. It's kind of, we're like a yin yang, and you've shifted all your crap to my side. I'm heavily into the corroded workshop. It is a mess. So yeah, need to get out of that.
Right, well, Fitz, I noticed that your Corsair / Crusader is on the bench behind you. Why is that?
I've been experimenting, sort of. I also got a new radio, and so I've been testing out programming it with various models of various complexity. And so I decided, hey, my Corsair might be an interesting model to try to program from scratch, because it's got an actual wing lift mechanism. It's got retracts, it has sequencing doors, kind of different things. So I pulled it down. I haven't touched it in a long time. It's been hanging up forever. I had to wipe off all the dust and crud off of it.
So for those who don't know, this was a House of Balsa A7 Corsair kit designed for Pusher Glow.
Correct.
You converted it to Pusher Electric.
Well, no, it was a Tractor Glow.
Oh, okay. It was in the nose.
Yeah, it was in the nose, yeah.
So you converted it from an A7 to a Crusader, which is a little bit same general shadow, but longer, sleeker.
It's Crusader-ish, I guess. Standoff
Crusader. It also has, more importantly, has the variable incidence wing.
Correct.
So the whole wing moves on yours, and it's a Pusher Electric.
This is a perfect show and tell moment, Fitz. How about you reach over and show it to us
all? Reach over and grab it. Sure.
I mean, it's. Yeah. You used to have that as a background page, I think, on your Facebook page, or maybe
somewhere.
YouTube channel.
Oh, on my YouTube channel, I think I had it. Yeah. Yeah, it's got. Let me grab it here. Sorry, it's. half partially disassembled, but the nose is off somewhere.
No disassemble.
No disassemble number five. So this was I had picked this up partially built some years ago, many years ago, at a swap meet back when I lived in the Dallas area. And
methinks he will replace that nose spitter with a 3D printed one someday soon.
Yeah, this is just a regular nose. Here we go.
I know.
So this was the House of Balsa A7. These were pretty neat. I think they started as a plan in one of the magazines, and eventually House of Balsa kitted them. And when I saw it, I thought, you know, I never was really an A7 fan per se. At a swap meet, it was a good price. I thought, but since it had only the wing was built. And I thought, well, I wonder if I could make it into sort of a hacked, sort of a way stand-up scale F8, because they're very, very similar in look. There's, you know, for those purists, yes, there's differences in the wing planform and some other things. But for sport, you know, for sport jet, I thought it'd be just a fun project. So what I did is I lengthened the fuselage from the kit. I've got a longer fuselage. I did do that. I didn't change anything on the wing, so it's basically it's the ace. A7 wing, but I did tweak parts of the fuselage, but I also hacked in retracts. The original kit did not have retracts, just had fixed gear, so I found some small retracts I was able to get in there. Sorry, just wires and stuff over here. So it's got nose retracts. I added servo actuated doors, and of course, as Terry mentioned, it's got a wing lift system. I can actually move it here, so you can lift variable incidence wing on. Doesn't need to move much. And so there's a servo in there for that, and there's flaps. I also added flaps. The original one didn't have flaps either. And to get the CG right, I decided to make it a pusher. So the motor is in the back, and the battery's in the front. And it worked out really well. The CG was really easy to do, and it performed really quite well. I've flown it a few times. I flew it at best a few times and some other stuff. But I liked it so much that I just sort of hung it up. I didn't want to, you know, destroy it or damage it or anything. It's got a few scuff marks, but I just thought it was just a cool thing. It's got a fantasy paint job from a Japanese anime that flew this plane. And it was a really neat project, and it was interesting. In fact, here is, I don't know if you can see that, here's the lift. The lift is really simple. It's just a servo, just a strong servo with a short arm and a carbon fiber rod and some a piano hinge in the back of the wing, basically, to lift it up and down. And it was funny because when you fly it, it flies fine, you know, normally, and if you lift the wing to land it, you almost got to kind of point the nose down like this, right, to come down because of the incidence. And it doesn't take much angle either. What's that?
Well, that was the original intent for it, right? So the pilots wouldn't have to lift the nose. When they come in for landing, they could just lift the wing and still have good visibility.
Yeah, what I understand is for carrier landings in particular, the fuselage was so long that you couldn't get much angle of attack to land it. You'd scrape the tail, so they just we'll just lift the wing. Okay. Yeah,
I thought it was more of a visibility issue, but you might be right.
I think it was that because the cockpit's pretty far forward, so the visibility probably was generally pretty good, but the nose was really long. And the F8s were cool because they were really fast. I think they broke a bunch of speed records when they first came out. They're considered the last of the real jet fighter dogfighters before missiles took over for everything. Even though these had missiles too, and I did add little guns to the front. There's little,
there you go.
You can barely see them, but there's little gun ports made out of aluminum and stuff. It was kind of neat to take it down. The covering's kind of getting a little wrinkly, but it's relatively flight ready. Some of the hinges kind of came loose. I got to glue those. I was actually debating whether I should take it up and fly it again.
You should.
It's so old, it's still got the power pole connectors on the speed controller.
Nice.
And I got to remember what battery I used for it.
Is it difficult to take off? I can imagine if you over-rotate, you're going to put the prop into the runway.
I don't remember ever having a problem taking off.
Okay.
I had a couple different positions. I had just a little bit of wing lift for flying around and taking off, and a lot for landing. But I don't remember it being particularly prone to scraping a prop.
Okay.
I had a weird, the first prop I used on it had too much of a bite, and it had a lot of torque rolling on it. And then the first flight was really wonky, and so I switched props to something a little less pitch on it, and that calmed it down and flew much better that way.
All right.
And so, yeah, it was, It actually flies really pretty nice. I never really don't recall really having an issue with it, flight wise. It just was a neat plane, and it can land pretty slow if you're careful with it, with the wing lift and flaps. Just a set of, I think the retracts are like F-16 similar ones or something. I don't remember. Okay. The only thing is the nose gear is really small, so I'm limited to paved runways, paved or petromat. The wheels are too small for grass. But it was a really, really fun project. This was pretty, I had a good time with it, and it's neat to, and so it was a really good test subject for reprogramming the radio because of the lift mechanism, mixing with the flaps, the retracts, with door sequencing, and that kind of stuff. So that's why it's not on a bench.
If you're going through all that trouble of reprogramming it, you may as well fly it.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I guess once my eye opens up, I'll take it up for old time's sake.
Right. So do you want to tell us about this radio, or is it still top secret?
No, I guess not. It is the iX-14 from the iX-14 Plus. But don't ask me what the Plus means. I am not quite sure. Other than it comes stock with 20-channel capability versus the 14-channel as original. And I believe it's out-of-the-box compatible with the AS3X Plus series of receivers. I think that's another thing for the Plus on it. This is the one with the touchscreen and the Android operating system. And all kinds of stuff. So kind of get a feel for it. And so I was trying to go through some of my more complicated models. You can also see the grip in back there too, the EDF.
Yep.
That has thrust vectoring. So that's another thing I was programming to see if I can get the selectable mixing for the thrust vector nozzle on the back as well. So really wanted to see what it was like to try to program oddball, goofball things in it. So and right now I'm also about to program K9 to run off of it too.
So. Oh, your robot dog.
Robo dog, yes. For you Doctor Who fans, I have a K9. That's why it's on the. Oh, I should mention my brand new workbench.
Ooh, nice.
You can barely see it, but I custom made a workbench over the holidays. And so this is. My previous workbench was actually technically three separate tables, benches, kind of clutched together. And it was a step on one of them because one was higher than the other two. And it was just, and they were split so they could, if I wasn't careful, they would move apart and stuff. So I thought, well, I am going to scratch build. I'm going to have a new workbench over the holidays since I'll have some time off. I found a neat design on one of the Facebook groups. The guy had just a picture of it, and I said, well, that's really neat. Do you have any plans? Like, no, I just built it because I thought it looked cool. And it was unlike anything I had ever seen for workbenches. So went down to Home Depot, bought a bunch of plywood and some nails and some fancy tools, and spent a couple days putting it together. So now I have this nice big workbench.
You need to go back and purchase another piece of that sound barrier.
Yes, the homosote.
Yep.
Yes, that's the next plan, is to get a slab of homosote to stick on top. And I'll be done. But I've been sort of, it's nice. It's got a bunch of shelves all the way around it, so I can put stuff. I can better organize. That's the next step, Terry. You're talking about organizing. That's what I've been trying to do, too, is when I can do that. It's such a pain to do that and time-consuming, but I want to organize. I was thinking of, you can see there's a mess over here, the A10 and stuff. I was going to redo that, see if I can find a way to shove some cabinets in here. And I was going to do something also. I bought some pegboard, so I'm going to try to squeeze in some pegboard in the shop to hang up some stuff.
So, nice.
So I still got some plans. Just I said, I'm taking 2 weeks off. So that should be plenty of time to do what I need to do. No, I need to take like a month off. There's 3 months off. But, you know, at least I get the core was to get the workbench. And so that's what I need because I got some more projects to work on. So,
all right.
And that's all I got to say about that.
All right. Well, congratulations. And Lee, make sure you shoot some video when he takes that Crusader up.
Of course I will.
I want to see that wing lift.
When he invites me.
Yeah, you got to come down for that. I don't think I'll be traveling. I can't take that flight at your field.
I'll meet you at Scobie.
Oh, yeah, that's Scobie. So I've been kind of having fun with that stuff. And just, I don't know what else to say. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Well, I will mention that it is New Year's Eve. Our club is doing a, you call it a frost flight or frozen finger fly. We're just flying into the new year. our club did it last year. I mean, they may have done it before, but we only had a couple of members do it last year. But they're at it again, and it's supposed to be relatively good weather and, you know, maybe just in the upper 50s. So should not be too bad. So I am planning to take Austin tonight around 11 o'clock. I am, as soon as we're done here, I'm going to go fix his speed controller for his Cub. And that's one project I have to do. But then he's going to program his night radian with my radio. And I have another night flyer. I'll probably bring my Thunder and Lightning. Oh, actually, I think I'm going to bring my Pawnee, my night Pawnee. I changed the prop on that. So might even push that to 4S. Who knows? Anyway, yada yada. We're going to go fly tonight. So I'm going to be getting our planes ready as soon as we hang up. Send some photos or updates for you guys when we get them.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So the idea is to be in the air when the calendar switches over?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
So this is the first time you've done it?
This is the first time I've done this. Yeah.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, very cool. Surprised. All right. Well, for those of you listening, we want to hear what you and or your club does to ring in the new year in style. So, yeah, send us an email, post on our Facebook page, whatever. Let us know how you guys treat the new year and what traditions you have. So maybe we can incorporate some new ones. All right. Well, we didn't plan to talk about this, but since we're here and we have a little bit of time left, what do you guys think was your favorite part of RC within 2024? Your highlight? Lee, start with you.
I think all three of us getting together for the Fun Fly.
Oh, the National Fun Fly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. That was good.
Good times. Hanging out. Yeah. Goofing
good
off.
Weather.
Yeah, like usual. Recording a podcast. Meeting new friends. taking up plywood overcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was all good. But as with every time we get together, just too short.
It was way too short.
It comes and goes.
And AirVenture was good too, but I think the Fun Fly was as nice, because, you know, it was a nice drive with me, Mike, and Fitz and Austin, you know, for our drive there, almost running out of gas. the very frightening, I am literally going to be stopping very soon. You'll see, can you see that road, that exit right there? That's as far as we're going to go.
How far can this thing coast?
That was pretty much it. No, that, for me, what about you, Fitz? Did you have anything else?
I have to say that was really pretty high up there. Yeah, just hanging out with you guys. And we had 2.5 opportunities, this, AirVenture. We had Florida. Of course, Terry wasn't there on that one, but, you know. Because that's your home ground, too.
Right.
The MA thing was real neat. That was, because we got to see the museum, too. They had a bunch of activities. I got to fly my jet for the first time. I'd say it was a highlight for me as well. Yeah.
All right. Well, not that I feel pressured, but yeah, my list is going to be similar to yours. I'm going to say a top three then. So the National Fun Fly, which is what you guys talked about, and then AirVenture is always a good time. It's just such a whirlwind. So it's, you're in the middle of it, and then at the end you have to take a break and kind of take stock of everything that happened.
You know, and this is, to go back on something you said, we had more time hanging out at the Fun Fly for just, what, the weekend than we were there all week at the AirVenture. We just were just too busy, and we were so tired coming home. So it was weird. We were able to enjoy ourselves a lot more at the Fun Fly.
Yeah. And so the third one I'll add on here, which excludes you two, was my return to the Neat Fair. Yeah, that was really fun to get back with that group of guys. And the weather was just amazing that week. So, yeah, it was a good year for me to get back there. So, that you do that again, maybe in 2025. I don't know. But
like I have added.
Go ahead.
I have added on my request for next year, Joe Nall and Neat Fair.
Okay. Awesome. So I guess I'm going to have to try to figure out how to make that happen too.
All right.
That's it. Oh, all right.
That's especially a haul. Especially if Fitz is coming, you're going to have to.
Oh, yeah. Then there's, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no getting out of
it. It's a requirement now.
Okay. Fair enough. So, as I mentioned, my article about Neat Fair is in the latest issue of Model Aviation Magazine. So take a peek.
Or the one that just came out?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I just got it in the mail a day or two ago. So, all right. Yeah. I'll take a look.
All right. Cool. Thank you. So, all right. Is there anything else we want to talk about? I'm looking at our list here that we made right before we started recording, and I think we hit it all.
Check it twice. Mm-hmm.
I will just say Happy New Year, everyone. I hope you have a great 2025, and keep us informed on what you are doing. You can always, always email Terry at contact@rcroundtable.com and let us know what you'd like us to talk about next year. Let us know if there are any other events that we should be attending that we have not mentioned. I mean, I'd love, there are so many I'd love to attend. You know, I'd like to get back to Ceph if possible and Perry.
Right, right.
But, you know, let us know where you're going. And again, let us know what topics you'd like us to share. And also, we mentioned this before during our last live show is what's a good day for you? What's a good time for you that we could do more of those? We'd like to get back into a better schedule. I know that's probably one of our New Year's resolutions. And I think doing the live shows is a lot of fun. We get a lot of interaction with our listeners and viewers. So let us know what works good for you.
Yeah. So how many years have we been doing this now? When did we start?
Eight? Is it eight?
I don't know. What year did we start?
Eight. 2016?
Okay.
So we're 17, right?
We're heading into 9 years. Wow. All right. Thanks for listening, you guys. Some of you have been with us that whole time. Some of you more recently, but
you got your money's worth.
We do appreciate it all the same. We always said back then, and I think we still say we do it for us because it's our chance to reconnect with each other. But the fact that other people take the time to listen is icing on the cake, and we appreciate it. So thank you.
Yes, thanks.
All right, old Cyclops, get us out of here.
Arr, mateys, arr.
He's a pirate clops.
Pirate clops. All right, well, as Lee said, thanks for joining us and bringing in the new year. We hope you have a good year and continue to support us. Check out our various social media stuff, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, YouTube at rcroundtable.com. If you're listening to this, if you're there, please like and subscribe, and of course, leave us comments. We always love to see the comments. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, and so forth. And on that note, I don't think anything else I want to add. I'm going to go and find some one-eyed activities to do. So, thanks for joining us, everybody. Guys, any last words before we head out?
Nope.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and watching, and we will see you later.
Cheerio.
Please visit our website at rcroundtable.com. That's where you will find all of our podcast episodes. You can also find a little bit of background information about the show host and leave comments and suggestions about the show. There are links to a few of our favorite vendors and also links to our various social media accounts. Thank you for watching and listening.